Australia's economy and our property markets don't operate in isolation, so I believe it's good to regularly look at the big picture, the macroeconomic factors affecting not just Australia, our property markets and our economy, but the world economy to help us understand what's ahead for us. And I do this once a month in these big picture podcasts with Pete Wargent. Well, regular listeners would know Pete well. If you're new to this podcast, well, firstly, welcome, because I see there's thousands of new listeners every month. But the reason I'm keen to discuss these matters with Pete is not because of his academic credentials as a chartered accountant or chartered secretary, or because he's got a financial planning diploma, but I enjoy my chats because he's got a credible perspective on what's happening around the world. Now, since our chat last month, Australia's circumstances have rapidly evolved, so we've got lots to discuss. Welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
We're in unfamiliar territory. A lot remains unknown about what life's going to be like on the other side of lockdowns. This time around, it looks like we're not going to exist in a COVID zero world. So we don't know what that really means. How are households going to spend their money? How many businesses are going to close? What mobility will look like? Basically, we're in uncharted waters. Yet despite what's now, well, 3 months of lockdown in Sydney and Melbourne in lockdown number six, in fact, more Australians in lockdown than are not, our real estate markets are in good shape. Of course, there are concerns about what the restrictions are going to do as they drag on, how they're going to weigh down on our financial situations on our housing market. But so far, there are very few signs of housing distress compared to last year. Loan deferrals are at a fraction of the first lockdown. Property price discounting by vendors is minimal. They don't need to. Everything's going well. There are few distressed sales, and property values are increasing in all our capital cities, despite the months of lockdown. I guess there seems to be some recognition that lockdown doesn't go on forever, and that once vaccination rates get to a critical number, our economy is going to open up again. Last year, many households took out loan deferrals preemptively as an insurance policy. They didn't need them in the end, did they? And as we entered these lockdowns, many households had a stronger financial balance sheet, and the housing markets were at an all-time high, so Australians' wealth was high. There seems to be less fear about losing jobs, greater confidence that house prices are going to be resilient, and on balance, our property markets are holding up much better than they did last year. But clearly, we're going to have to watch and see how all this plays out in the next few months. So I'm looking forward to my regular monthly big picture chat with economic analyst Pete Wargent, a lifelong student and commentator of the economy. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Michael. Pleasure to be on, as always.
Now, Pete, you're in the United Kingdom, even though you're an Australian citizen. You went back a while ago. Many people listening to this podcast, they're in lockdown. I know that you've got a different lifestyle. We just chatted before we pressed the record button, different lifestyle to a lot of Australians here at the moment, living back here. So what's life like after lockdowns? Is it back to normal?
Yeah, I think there is some light at the end of the tunnel for Australia. Life in Europe is pretty normal. So we've had huge festivals over the summer, like the Reading Festival and a whole load of others, packed football stadiums, very few masks now at most events, and also international travel. I know we were just chatting before we came online there. You know, we've been over to Portugal, we're going to Crete next week. I think, you know, we're probably spending a bit more time outdoors than indoors, you know, where possible. And I think there's one caveat, and that is Europe still has to go into its winter period, which I guess there's people just looking over their shoulder to say, well, will there be another wave and more pressure on the hospitals? But generally speaking, life is pretty normal now. And I think that is what Australia has to look forward to as it goes into summer and gets the vaccination rates up.
Well, back here, we're waiting for the vaccination rates to go up and then for local barriers to be lifted and then hopefully borders to be lifted locally, interstate, internationally as well. In the meantime, let's have a look at what's happening to our economy in Australia, because it looks like we dodged that, well, just by the skin of the teeth, we dodged what could have been a double-dip recession. The June quarter GDP rose a little bit. That miracle V-shape recovery, well, it may not be a V now. It's probably going to be more like a swoosh. We'll go up slowly again. The Reserve Bank's had a lot to say about this lately, Pete.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, we say we've dodged a technical recession, but, you know, basically we are in a recession, the entire economy for Sydney, Melbourne, Canberra, you know, full on lockdown. So, you know, technically speaking, you could say, well, we might not have two quarters of negative growth, but it's a recession by any other name. And obviously in the third quarter of the year, and even measuring the economy by quarter is pretty arbitrary, of course, but you could probably expect to see the economy shrink by about, say, 2 to 4%. And I think over this lockdown period, you might see employment drop by maybe 500,000. But I think what we've learned from internationally and from Australia's first experience is that things should bounce back pretty quickly. Now, the Reserve Bank, as you mentioned, they've been quite vocal this week, and Governor Lowe is very clear that the cash rate is going to stay at 0.1% for a long time to come. He even said the market pricing of the cash rate heading towards 1% by 2024 is too optimistic. So essentially what the board has said, it won't increase the cash rate until inflation sustainably back at 2 to 3%. They don't just want to get back there for a quarter or two. They want it to be sustainably back above 2% and not dipping back. So, you know, that means we need to see wages growing at 3% plus again, and we're a long way from that. So, yes, stimulatory policy for several years to come, you would think.
Well, this round of lockdowns, the Delta strain of the coronavirus, has put any of those suggestions off for a couple of months, if not another year or so, because, as you say, unemployment's now going to rise, and it's going to take a while for inflation to pick up. Currently, the number of jobs advertised is starting to drop as well. And while the latest figures, the Australian Bureau of Statistics unemployment figures, were 4.6% in July, that was good and everyone rejoiced. But that really was a while ago, and it was, the world's changed since then, in Australia at least. And if you dig deeper, there were lots of people with multiple jobs. People were creating jobs, but not the sort of jobs people want, and people weren't working as many hours as they would have hoped to, Pete.
Yeah, it's a very confused picture for the labour force, because of course we don't have international migration now to fill a lot of the roles. So there's been some pressures in some sectors. And then, as you mentioned, we went into a lockdown. And I mean, there's a bit of a running joke in economic circles that the labour force figures, it's a bit like the old game show number wang, you know, It's based on a survey. We don't really know what the numbers will do from month to month. That's the case anyway. But if you think about August and September, you look at the economic predictions, the market forecasts, I mean, they're absolutely all over the place. Nobody's got any idea what to expect for August and September. You know, the worst case scenario is maybe employment might drop by 300,000 a month, and that would see unemployment back above 6%. Best case scenario is something a lot less. But I think the key point that Lowe made is that once the economy reopens, we should rebound very quickly as we reopen the economy. And I think part of that is just the war chest of savings that we've built up because of the stimulus measures, of course.
Sure. Well, we have been stashing our cash, and Australians are richer than ever. I guess it's related to their assets. The value of people's homes have gone up, their superannuation funds, the share market's up, dividends are being paid again. So Philip Lowe is very comfortable that that money is going to be spent once we open the borders. I think another factor is consumer confidence, Pete. That's actually held up really well. Sure, it's dropped, understandably, but it hasn't plummeted like it did last year when the first round of lockdowns occurred.
No, I think there's a better understanding this time. Plus, we've got vaccines. I think the war chest of cash, I mean, there's $1.5 trillion now sitting in cash and deposits. That's a huge pile of cash. And that's built up because of the stimulus measures, but also record low mortgage rates, and particularly no international travel. That's traditionally these days, people like to travel overseas and spend their money, and that just can't happen. So the household debt to income ratio is actually well below its previous peaks. Remember, a few years ago, people were, you know, worried about it hitting 2x disposable income. Well, we're down probably at 1.8 or so now. I think the other thing is that the measures of household wealth have just ballooned. You know, house prices are nearly 20% higher than they were pre-pandemic. Stock markets are 10% higher. And I think I was just looking at the numbers that the ABS put out yesterday. The total value of the housing stock in Australia, you remember during the May 2019 election, there was a lot of uncertainty and we had the Banking Royal Commission. The housing stock was worth about 6.6 or 6.7 trillion. Well, now it's nearly 9. You know, it's a huge uplift in household wealth. So as you mentioned, confidence is actually pretty strong underlying. And I think once things reopen, it could be the roaring 20s again.
Very likely, because people are feeling confident. They've stashed their cash for a rainy day, and that rainy day may not be as bad as they were expecting. Also, they've been paying down their credit card debt. So the figures showed that we aren't spending as much during lockdown this time around. I guess, how many more computers can you buy in your house? People set themselves up for home offices last year. They set themselves up for being at home more often with home gyms. So they're actually not spending as much, and they've paid down huge amounts on their credit card debt. $1.1 billion was paid off in the month of July alone.
Yes, we were chatting just before we started recording about how this is having an impact on some small and medium-sized businesses, particularly retailers. People have been stuck at home. And I think that is the flip side to this. You know, people have been extinguishing debt, and that's great. And household balance sheets have really been bolstered over the past 18 months. But I think for a lot of some of those small and medium-sized businesses, they're in that kind of survival mode at the moment. They've big drops in revenues. So there are some parts of the economy that will really get hurt by these lockdowns. And, you know, you mentioned there's empty shops and for lease signs all around the place. So there are some sectors that are going to feel some pain here as well.
Sure. So it really is turning out to be a two-speed economy, that knowledge workers, people who can work from home, higher paid skill level 1, 2 people seem to have kept their jobs, and the rich are getting richer, and others are unfortunately suffering, and it'll take a while for them to pick up, for those jobs to pick up in the hospitality industry, in the travel industry. Hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later.
Yes, I think the big thing for Australia as well is how and when do the international borders reopen. I think that will be a big driver. I mean, there'll be a big backlog of Aussies wanting to return from overseas, but also tourism. There's been sort of a wall of pent-up demand. And also it actually has an impact on the labour force as well, because we just haven't had the supply of people coming in to do those jobs. So, yeah, it feels like it's going to be really next year before that happens in earnest, though.
Sure. So that's actually created an interesting conundrum. Why are property values going up? Why are rents going up? Why are vacancy rates going down when we don't have the influx of people from overseas, the population growth? And in my mind, Pete, it's the fact that people are upgrading. People have got this money. People are reevaluating how they want to live, where they want to live. So tenants are upgrading to become first home buyers. And millennials are moving out of their apartments into homes as they're going into family formation stage. Baby boomers are deciding how they want to live, where they want to live. Some are moving to regional Australia. Others are just changing the suburbs they're living in. So there's been a lot of internal shifting around.
Yes, it's kind of a race for space, isn't it? The CBDs, which are not really markets we do much in, we don't really play in that space, but there's a lot of empty units in the inner city. And I think as well, traditionally in Australia, we've got a lot of international students and things like share houses. In the middle of a pandemic, people just don't want to be there. So people have generally shifted outwards and they're looking for a somewhat limited supply of rental stock. We know that there's been curbs on investors for a number of years and some landlords have sold up. Vacancy rates just keep on falling. They're now 1.6% nationally, but that even accounts for all of those empty units in the CBD. So if you get away from those markets, extremely tight rental markets, and not what people would have necessarily expected given the closed borders.
So how's all that happening when people can't inspect properties? And only this week, Pete, Finder brought out a review showing that people are more prepared to buy a home sight unseen or rent a house sight unseen than they're prepared to buy a pet sight unseen. That was quite unusual. 11% of people were prepared to buy a home without seeing it. 8% were prepared to rent a property without seeing it, but only 8% were prepared to buy their next dog or cat without touching and feeling it.
Yeah, well, rising prices can do that. I guess, you know, people see these figures being reported and they can see it in the home loans figures. You know, they're absolutely record highs or near enough record highs. And that people see the media headlines, prices getting away from them, and it creates a sense of a fear of missing out. And if you think about it, and this is the big picture podcast, I mean, that is what a currency is supposed to do. With a bit of inflation over time, that encourages to spend our money rather than stash it. But when you've got a housing market where the media headlines are talking about prices up 5 or 10% in a quarter, that just encourages people to get on with it, even if they haven't inspected the property in some cases. And I'm sure you would recommend your buyer's agency services instead of people taking the risk.
Very much so. So you're talking about home loans, and you're right. Even though they've dropped a little bit, they still are at, well, near record highs. The value of home loans approved over the first 7 months of this year, which were the latest figures seasonally adjusted, a remarkable 65.4% up on the same period last year. In June, there were $32.12 billion worth of loans approved. Pete, that means $1 billion worth of money a month going into our real estate markets.
Yeah, and I think the numbers might be just off their highs in the most recently reported figures, but you know, big picture, if you exclude the refinancing, you know, we're running about $20 billion a month, but now we're above 30. So it's a huge increase. And even now, loan sizes are still increasing because people actually have got a bigger borrowing capacity now. Mortgage rates are lower. People have higher incomes because of the stimulus. And I think the thing that's really changed in recent months is that investors are coming back. So investor lending is now about double where it was a year ago. With vacancy rates at record lows, I can't see how regulators would want to intervene on that because we actually need landlords.
Sure. Well, APRA says it won't intervene anytime soon. Sure, our property markets are booming, but the percentage of interest-only loans is much more comfortable than it was when they were concerned last time. The percentage of loans with a very high debt-to-income ratio also is at comfortable levels. APRA is unlikely to do anything, well, at least this side of Christmas.
Yeah, as you mentioned, if you look at interest-only loans outstanding as a share of the housing, the stock of housing credit, it's about 13% now. I think it's below 13%. At the peak, it was 39. So you can't really see any further intervention being required there, particularly as the trend is still down. There's very little low deposit lending, as you mentioned. Low doc loans have gone these days. And with vacancy rates at near record lows, you can't really see investors being targeted. I think the only thing that could really happen is that maybe some of that higher debt to income lending might just get trimmed. I think where people have got debt that's over, say, six times their income, there is a bit of that going on, and maybe that will get a look in, not necessarily because of high risk lending per se, just to try and cool the rate of credit growth in the market.
Well, people are worried the interest rates are going to go up and what's that going to do and how the property market's going to cope, and the negative Nellies that continue to be out there. Those property pessimists are saying there's going to be a lot of mortgage default. But it should be remembered that currently, with all this lending, banks are already building in a buffer of rising interest rates that you've got to be able to service your loan at a rate higher than what you're currently borrowing. And that's unlikely to happen. But individuals, some are going to get themselves in trouble. But overall, Pete, as you said, the Australian residential real estate market is close to $9 trillion. And all the debts against this is $1.9 trillion. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but if you look at the total loan-to-value ratio of Australian residential real estate, it's around 23%. A lot of Australians who bought their home 20, 30, 40 years ago, they've paid off their debt. So there's not a debt problem in this residential real estate market.
Not at the macro level. It's interesting, actually, because I think that broadly reflects my own personal situation. You know, I was when I was younger, I was much had a higher gearing level. Today it might be about 25%, you know, and you think, well, yes, you know, I think at the margin there may be some risk. I think where could people get themselves into trouble? I think some landlords at the moment struggling to find tenants in the CBDs, they might need a mortgage holiday. But you see, mortgage holidays are a relatively new idea across the system. We used to get them on sort of individual case-by-case basis. And I think maybe, you know, in some of the regional markets, people are getting a bit carried away with some of the prices they're paying. And they might just wonder, you know, in a couple of years' time when the capital cities are pumping again, whether they might have cooled their jets a little bit. So, but yeah, as you said, the big picture is, you know, debt is being very comfortably managed because mortgage rates are much lower than they used to be.
I think you made a good point about the regional markets, which have performed well, and they performed better than the capital city markets overall, even though you've got to look at things more granularly, but they performed better than the capital city markets overall for the first part of this boom. But that's because in these small country towns, if 5-10 people move in, there isn't much depth to those markets. There isn't much in the way of rental properties available. There isn't much in the way of houses, vacant houses for people to sell or people upgrading. So small changes get accentuated. At the same time, it's hard for builders to create new stock if people are moving into these regions. It's hard to get tradespeople to come there to build when it's hard to get tradespeople to come to capital cities. So on that basis, it's possible that some of those regional prices have just gone up a little bit too much. And if people are wanting to get out of the market in a couple of years' time, either come back to the big smoke or investors who found they've made a mistake, there may not be the depth of buyers, home buyers, first home buyers, established home buyers, investors in the market to protect them. That's why I know you and I actually prefer buying in markets that have quite significant market depth.
Yeah, it's in financial markets, they talk about liquidity. And it's a bit like if you put the same amount of water through a very thin hose, it can spray a long way. And that's in some of those markets where there isn't much liquidity and there's not much depth. As you said, it doesn't take much of a shift of people out to the regions. And suddenly you've got a, you know, big price booms on your hands. But of course, we know from previous cycles, what happens when that goes into reverse. Previously, it was mining towns. This time around, it will be possibly some of the lifestyle locations. Or, you know, we've seen it before in Gold Coast apartments as well. You know, the big boom and then it all goes into reverse. It's exactly the same in stock markets. You know, it's down at that illiquid end of the market. Prices can suddenly spike with just a few buyers. But then, of course, when the buyers disappear, there's no depth to sell into. So there is something there. Just for people to be wary of, and they don't want to overpay.
Sure. Now, I regularly read your blog at petewargent.blogspot, and we'll put a link of that in the show notes. But only a couple of days ago, you wrote about the rising number of expats returning to Australia. What are you seeing? What are you finding?
Yeah, I mean, it's always difficult to get a handle on these figures because there's people like me that come and go all the time and, you know, people don't know if you've gone for 1 month or six. And but roughly speaking, you're talking about 1 million Aussie expats around the globe at any point in time. Best estimates is about half of those have now actually made their way back to Australia over the past 18 months. So there has been a bit of a pickup in people returning to Australia, but also some of the expats who are still overseas are actually looking to buy property for the same reasons as others, really. They just fear, you know, they're fearful of prices rising away from them. So they just want to get a toehold on the ladder. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens when the borders reopen more broadly. And I think there's probably still some more expats who would like to get home after such a long break without seeing friends, family, and loved ones.
Sure. And when they come home, even though Australian house prices have gone up, especially where they're wanting to go, Sydney, Melbourne, a lot from Queensland, southeast Queensland as well, they're used to different house prices, different rentals in many of the big cities overseas. So they're bringing a bit of cash home with them. That's going to be an impetus for our housing markets.
Yes, and they aren't necessarily shocked by high housing prices because they're very often, expats are often based in Singapore or Hong Kong, London, Manhattan. So they're kind of used to seeing expensive units in those markets anyway. And quite often people go overseas to work in low tax rate environments like Singapore and Hong Kong. So they're pretty cashed up when they do come back.
Well, putting all this together, our housing markets still have got quite some way to go. There's still the impetus of lowish interest rates, of slightly rising wages, and the pent-up demand as our housing markets have been put into hibernation, especially in our two big capital cities. While the rate of growth is going to slow, Pete, we couldn't keep going at the... I remember back in March, we grew 2.8% nationally in 1 month. That's unsustainable, but the rate of growth has slowed. But still, if we, and as we did speak at the beginning of this year, I don't think either of us really would have believed that overall Australia's property values would have gone up 20%, as they're very likely to, and in some areas much more than that in this year, 2021.
I actually did a sort of back of the cigarette packet type of calculation, and I thought the cuts to mortgage rates could see prices nationally up 25 to 33%. I didn't think it would all happen this year, though.
So no, we thought that was going to happen over the cycle.
Yeah,
and it
that's
very
right.
likely will.
So there is some pull forward there. I think what you probably will see happen is that there's a lot of people who are looking to sell property, and they're starting to make inquiries with real estate agents. They just haven't had the confidence to list, and eventually, you know, it's the old immutable laws of supply and demand. Eventually, sellers will come back to the market. So that should just bring things back into balance. At the moment, stock levels are about 30% below where they should be for this time of year. So it's a very, very difficult for prices not to rise in that kind of pressure cooker environment. But eventually, we'll see more sellers. Maybe it'll be in the first quarter of next year, and that should just slow things down a bit, which is actually what we need to happen.
Of course, most sellers are buyers and buyers are sellers. So sellers are wondering, why should I put my house on the market at the moment if, firstly, I can't even find a new place to move to and buyers can't come to see me? So it will be interesting to see what happens. The beginning spring market that we're experiencing at the moment isn't the normal one where there's lots of stock on the market. Maybe we should finish off on another note, though. There's an election looming. I think over the last couple of months, Australian politics has been overwhelmed with the COVID outbreaks, and it's easy to forget that we actually have to have an election. There was some suggestion it was going to be in October this year. Can't see that happening now with it being around. Others are suggesting maybe February, March next year.
Yeah, I think people tend to remember the last thing you did in life, and that's particularly true in politics. So I expect... the Coalition and Scott Morrison will want to go to an election with a good news story on the reopening. I think this time around, the Labour Party will make themselves a smaller target. So, as you know, last time around, there was lots of talk about new taxes, taxes on housing, negative gearing, franking credits. I think this time around, they'll make themselves a much smaller target. The polls at the moment have Labour ahead, of course, because of what's been going on with lockdowns. But if you actually look at the betting exchanges, you'll see a lot tighter odds on the Coalition winning. And remember, last time around, Labour were at Winks odds going into the election, but then performed very poorly at the polling booths. So I suppose in the end, you've got to win seats and not news poll surveys. And I think it will probably be next year before we actually see the election called.
Sure. So in the meantime, we're going to work our way through the challenges we've got. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. This time last year, we didn't know what was going to happen. Now we believe that once we got the vaccines, they're going to loosen many of our restrictions, but we're going to live in a different world. So Pete, thank you for spending this time having a chat with me about the economy and what's happening around Australia and the world. If people want to get more information from you, how do they find out?
Well, I'm pretty easy to find on most social media platforms these days. I seem to be on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else. But most easiest place to find me, PeteWardgen.com or PeteWardgenBlogspot. You'll track me down pretty easily.
And of course, I'll leave a link in the show notes. And I enjoy listening to your podcast because it's actually not just about property, but it's about the stock market and returns. So how can people find out about your podcast, Pete?
Yeah, so the podcast is called the Low Rates, High Returns podcast, and that's with me and Stephen Moriarty. And that's much more focused on the stock market, how to generate a passive income from stocks, and how you can invest to generate financial independence through the stock market. So it's a bit different from the property world, but well worth a listen.
Well, I think investors should diversify, not only be in one investment asset class. But if we go back to the beginning of our chat, the world post-lockdowns that you're living in is actually quite fun. So there's a lot for us to look forward to, including having a chat with you again this time next month. Thanks, Pete.
Pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
In a moment, I'm going to share my mindset message with you, and it's possibly going to offend somebody, but you'll see what I mean when you listen in a sec. Before I do, I'd like to give you another way of keeping up to date with what's happening in our property markets by offering you a bundle of ebooks and reports. Just go to podcastbonus.com.au. There'll be a link in the show notes, podcastbonus.com.au, and you can get a bundle of ebooks and reports from me. And before we get onto the mindset moment, I hope you learned from my chat with Pete that we will get through this. This too shall pass. Life will be normal again, as it is for Pete in the United Kingdom. And when it is, and when our borders open, our local borders, and then eventually our international borders, our property markets are going to rebound, particularly when the international borders open and we're going to have more immigrants coming in. But just because the property markets are rebounding, not all properties are going to increase in value similarly. In fact, the rising tide doesn't lift all ships, does it? So do you know how to take advantage of the current property market and the boom that we're going to have? Would you like my team at Metropole on your side? Why not go to metropole.com.au and find out about how we could help you? And it all starts by putting a strategic property plan together for you. We help you plan to become the person you plan to become. And then we give you direction and guidance on how to get there. And you may end up choosing to use our buyer's agency or our property management, renovations, development, business advisory, financial planning, wealth advisory services. We've got a raft of services to help you. We'll have to find out what your needs are. So we don't have a one-size-fits-all approach. And by the way, we don't sell property. So go to metropole.com.au and why not find out how we can help you achieve what you want to achieve. I'd love to be part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to share with you a provocative quote by the late actor and humanitarian Hugh O'Brien. And when I read it, I actually had to look at it twice because he said, "People are not created equal." He said, "I don't believe all people are born equal." He said, "Created equal in the eyes of God, yes, but physical and emotional differences, parental guidelines, varying environment, being in the right place at the right time, all these play a role in enhancing or limiting an individual's development." And he's right. He went on to say, "But I do believe every man and woman, if given the opportunity and encouragement to recognize their potential, regardless of their background, has got the freedom to choose in our world. Will an individual be a taker or a giver in life? Will that person be satisfied merely to exist or seek a meaningful purpose? Will he or she dare to dream the impossible dream?" And he finished off by saying, "I believe every person is created as the steward of his or her own destiny with great power for a specific purpose, to share with others through service a reverence for life in the spirit of love." Well, interesting thoughts. So, no, we're not all born equal. But if you're listening to this in Australia or one of the other great countries that a lot of people listen to this podcast in, you've already won the lottery in life. You've won the lottery by being born at this time. Now, I know there are a lot of challenges going on in the world and probably in your life personally, but you have the opportunity, as Hugh O'Brien said, to decide your destiny. You're the steward of your future. So be the pilot of your life. Don't be a passenger just going on a ride. If you got some benefit from my chat with Pete Wargent, or even from my short mindset message, and you know somebody else who'd also benefit from it, why not tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast? There's a share button on every podcast app, but just tell them about it because I'd like you to help me in my quest to make more people financially fluent, successful in life. Now, I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me in between these shows on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. And why not join my private Facebook group? Just look on Facebook and go for the Property Update Facebook group, where every day I leave some tips, some charts, some information, things you won't get elsewhere from me. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?